ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Business, big and small, is shaping our economy, our present and our future. But it's a loud and busy world out there, and you need voices you trust to unpack the big stories and ask the right questions. I'm Carrington Clark, host of the new podcast, ABC Business Daily. Monday to Thursday, we take the big business stories and break them down. What happened? Why it happened? Who it helps? Who it hurts? Search for ABC Business Daily on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, the Australian people have voted for Australian values.
The choice is simple for the Liberal Party. Change or die.
We need to have more Australian everything. We need to manifest a hyper-Australia.
We've always been about the planet, but we've got to make sure that people have their daily needs met.
People are starting to see that there is actually a different way of doing politics.
Hello and welcome to The Party Room. I'm Patricia Carvelis, joining you from the place where it's all happening this week, Ngunnawal Country in Parliament House, Canberra.
And I'm Frank Kelly on the Gadigal land of the Eora Nation here in Sydney, recording a little later than usual on this Thursday because we've been on strike for 24 hours here at the ABC in support of better pay and more secure and sustainable jobs for our junior colleagues mostly. So it's just you and me, PK, pumping it out today. And yes, you're still down in Canberra, Parliament sitting, so you'd think it's all happening there, but actually the conversation's really moved beyond the chamber this week, hasn't it? Inside Labor, inside the Coalition, in and about the Strait of Hormuz and at the Bowser, and that's the story this week, yeah?
It's the big story, absolutely, and will be for some time. I wish it wasn't the big story for some time, but I think it is. We're going to touch briefly also today on the South Australian election result. It's nearly a week on, and the aftershocks, I think, are still very much reverberating through both major parties. Labor is not immune. I've spoken to lots of very senior people in the Labor Party who say, you know, they are deeply concerned that they are next, actually, and they need to inoculate themselves against this populist wave, particularly in their working class seats.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that later.
And it's a real thing and they're really planning for it, which shows, I think, you know, political maturity too, not to think, it's just the other side. Midweek, we also got the government's long-awaited trade deal with the European Union, a political win, I think, for Anthony Albanese, Don Farrell, the trade minister. But it has predictably made farmers angry and given the National Party and their new leader, Matt Canavan, something really to fight on, I think. You know, Matt Canavan calling it the worst deal. Then the big one, the fuel shock. The anxiety is building by the day, and all that means, of course, that the government is heading into a budget with so much pressure on it. There are so many booby traps in this budget. Like, I just can't imagine having to construct a budget in this environment. It's changing so quickly. The government is under real pressure to find answers to the fuel shortage. There is a view, I've got to tell you, by many people in the Labor Party, that they have not managed this well. And what I mean by that is not just the actual issue itself, but the politics, you know, looking like they had a sense of urgency about it at the start. Optics matter. They say behind the scenes, we have been doing things, so they don't concede that point, but more language was too slow. And that, I think, has put them on the back foot. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I was going to ask you how you thought the government's handling this because you are down there. But, you know, the PM's called another National Cabinet meeting for Monday.
I intend convening again. The National Cabinet meeting will meet next week to further coordinate the activity that we are taking. And indeed, coordinating that activity is important that we have national consistency.
Order. Members on my left.
My question is, why is he waiting till next week? Urgency, as you say, is not just required, it's also politically how the government needs to be seen to be responding right now. Now, I think some of the allegations that the government's been too slow to act, it's asleep at the wheel, a bit overblown. I mean, everyone needed to watch to see how this was going to work out. Donald Trump was promising a short, sharp hit. It would be all over in days, remember? So I think, you know, the government's initial message to everyone of don't panic was the right message. But as we've seen before, PK, sometimes our Prime Minister and some of his top lieutenants just don't get the emotional messaging right. However, I do think that criticism has been a little overblown. But now I think the government needs to pull out all stops. I mean, petrol stations across the country are running out of petrol. People are reconsidering trips with Easter coming. All sorts of places are, you know, letting it be known that they've had bookings cancelled all across country Australia. And this is visceral, this worry. PK, I live in the inner suburbs of Sydney. I went to fill up this week and I had to go to three petrol stations to find fuel. Despite all that I know, they'd run out. The bowsers were empty.
Really? That hasn't happened to me yet. Sorry. Yeah. I know it's happening to people, but it hasn't happened to me yet.
So, you know, I know how few petrol stations are out of fuel because I've heard Chris Bowen tell us the numbers and it's hundreds, not thousands. But I felt the panic rise. So imagine if you have to commute every day for an hour or more, or if you have to travel interstate for work every week. You know, these are real concerns. Now, just to fill everyone in and reassure them, I also then saw the tanker pull up at my local petrol station and it got refilled that afternoon. But all I'm saying is I felt that sense of panic, and it's at that moment I'm like, all right, Chris Bowen, don't tell me not to panic. Because I just was, this is making me panic, you know?
Yeah, being told not to panic is like, it's like when, you know, you're having a fight with your girlfriend and they're like, oh, don't get so upset. Don't, you know, calm down. And you're like, oh, now I'm not calm.
But being told not to panic by, I think, is a valid message from governments. The thing is, and that's why I say about National Cabinet, it needs to be a united national message and it needs to have information behind it, like now we are getting how many petrol stations are running out of petrol, where they are, you know, like we do have rationing plans in place that will come in place if it's needed at a timely moment. But right now we are waiting to see, you know, if the Strait of Hormuz comes open again, and we are talking to our oil providing allies and things like that. Just a bit more information, I think, is what's
just
needed.
Just a bit more information is the least. Yes, the information is one part of it, but really the actual fuel is the other part. There are, Fran, so there's this fuel task force that's been doing a lot of work, had lots of meetings trying to work out what to do. The government says it's got the distribution plan because they have appointed the national coordinator. But because there are so many petrol stations, as you rightly say, without the fuel, I don't think one plus one equals two is happening here, right? So they say, oh, we've got the plan. Of course, there's a lag effect in terms of trying to deal with all of this. But I think that they are going to have to look at some pretty serious measures now. The big one, of course, so they're going to meet, as you say, you think Monday's too late. I should agree with you. I would be having it today. Like, I'd be like really accelerating.
I'd be having it weekly.
Be having it daily. Like, you know, I'm trying to one-up you, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I've spoken to a few senior people and there is a sense that the government, okay, one person said to me, which is a good line, which was, you know, what a waste of a crisis. Now, I'll explain what that means politically. Person was suggesting to me, and said it to me, a Labor person, that, you know, a crisis like this, you can really lean into them as a government too and exploit them. I mean, we know this in history, yet this government doesn't look like it's really, I'm sure it would like to exploit it, but it's not very good at exploiting it or looking sort of in charge.
Well, what would exploiting it look like?
Oh, accelerating the pace of fixing it, going out to market and getting more bloody petrol, right? Like, that's a proposal that's in front of them, like get more petrol.
Yeah, but how?
There's petrol at record prices, but on the market, you can get petrol. It's about the political decision to spend that money, to do it, to insure yourself because you know something is coming. Now, they do know it's coming. It is coming. It's coming at us like a freight train. So get ahead of it. Now, I suspect they will do that, right? But why the lag? You know, like this seems like a lot of bureaucracy going on here. And then, of course, the big question of rationing, because food security, you know, farmers, like the stuff that needs to happen as a priority above some of our, you know, inner city needs, because they are different, which is, yeah, maybe you will need to work from home so that you're not using the petrol on that day or you're on public transport and the fuel is redirected at some point to the places where we need to secure our food supply and so forth. That's reasonable. They've been avoiding making these sorts of comments because, or agreements, because they rightly are a bit stung by the COVID experience, Fran, and the experience of command and control economies where people are not happy. And of course, it leads to people being very disgruntled that the government's too interventionist in their lives. But we are in a big crisis. And unless we kind of look like we're coordinating what that crisis looks like in a more coherent way, I think they're going to face a political backlash.
Yeah, I think at a government at a time like this, and this is, I guess, what we're talking about, the Prime Minister needs to seem like and look like, even if he is, needs to look like he's in control. And that's about the messaging. I mean, look, what can Australia do? We are all basically waiting to see how Donald Trump gets out of this war. You know, will talks happen on Thursday? Is Tehran in back channel talks with the United States? Will anything succeed in getting the Strait of Hormuz open again and oil supplies shipped around the globe? That's the big picture. That's the only thing that will head off this thing going in for next month and if not beyond. One Nation and the Coalition, they are leaning into this. They're a bit of a unity ticket, pressing the government to announce rationing. Barnaby Joyce is at it again this week, but he's had that message for a few weeks now. And as you say, the government is looking at those options. It's got a list drawn up, but it's waiting to see whether we need it. Now, that's not that's appropriate. You know, if it's going to be done in a few days' time, you don't want to start people rationing because that'll start people panicking and you don't want more of that. So, look, I think the government has been slow in some of the measures that look like they're in control and command, and that's what you're talking about. But there are other things too. Like Allegra Spender joined me on the show, on my show this week, the Radio National Hour, and she's got this call for a war windfall tax to be brought in urgently to use the money it raises to support motorists. Because the oil companies are making a mozza at the moment with prices this high. Get some of that profit, give it back to the motorists by cutting fuel excise or some other measures. Now, PK, the Treasurer, as we've spoken about before, wasn't planning on many handouts in this upcoming budget. It was all about savings, right? It was all about, well, aka cuts. It was all about government trying to cut its spending to take pressure off inflation. But yesterday, Jim Chalmers told us all that this war has changed that equation. He's now talking about inflation going as high as 5.5%. And behind closed doors, I understand he's talking even higher than that. And the longer it goes on, this conflict, he says quite bluntly, the tougher this will be. So, you know, are we going to need to see the government, and this would be the leaning in maybe you're talking about, using this conflict as cover for more pump priming, for more spending, and could that protect it from accusations from the opposition that the government just, you know, likes to spend, tax and spend, tax and spend? So, you know, gestures, I think, are needed. Actual support for people will be needed very, very soon. And like I say, if I was the PM, I'd be calling National Cabinet weekly because those premiers, they'll be asking for help, that's for sure.
Mm, and they're asking for a national distribution, yeah, right? Like Chris Minns has been saying that. And clearly, I think all the direction is that they will move in that direction. So it's all on the cusp, Fran. There's a lot of proposals before them. I think you're right about the budget being, it's very contradictory, isn't it? We're in this sort of fiscal tightening period because of inflation. Still, we have an inflation problem. And of course, the war makes inflation worse. But equally, people are very, very vulnerable at the moment. The economy is pretty precarious, right? Like we're in a precarious position. And so the government is perhaps even in GFC territory, you know, possibly. This is a real wait and see over the next couple of weeks. There's a lot of prediction about when it will all end, but you know, it's pretty wild that they're constructing a budget in this environment where it's like, do we spend more or less? You know, yeah. It's wild, isn't it? Like, what?
It's changing every
whiplash.
Day. It's whiplash.
It's absolute whiplash. Now, there's kind of concurrent things going on for the government. There's a word I want to use to you, Fran, and it's a word that I've heard so many times, particularly since the South Australian election, where One Nation outpolled the coalition, which is sovereignty.
Matt Canavan's favourite word.
Sovereignty. Sovereignty, sovereignty, sovereignty. Now, first thing about sovereignty, just a little note to the political people who listen, and boy, oh boy, there's a lot of them. Hi, guys. If you are a senior minister, sovereignty means nothing to normal people. Get yourself a better word. What you're talking about is
PK, jobs. PK, I've got to interrupt you there. You know what the better word is or phrase, don't you? Australia first.
Australia first. Well, it's sovereignty is, you know, as a country we can do stuff and we're not relying on China to make things or whatever, or our oil from the Strait of Hormuz. You know, we're not, right? We're doing stuff.
We want to be
here.
A country that makes things.
Stands on its own two feet when there is a crisis. We're not freaking out because we're so reliant on every supply chain. That's the idea, especially in critical areas. Now, of course, it was a big issue during COVID and Labor lent into it. And then I think it's fair to say everyone's dropped the ball and now it's the new black. You've got basically an opposition, Andrew Hastie fighting the good fight on it, making it his issue, being given a portfolio to argue for it. Then you've got Labor that says, hang on a minute, you know, the whole Future Made in Australia fund, that was their idea. They started this, they would argue, and now they're trying to lean into it more. So this week we had, really, it's very much old school industrial policy. Tim Ayres announced another $2 billion bailout of Rio Tinto's Queensland aluminium smelter. Like, that's wild.
A lot of money.
Wild. So now we are just, and I've had other Labor people, because there's a lot of debate internally, they just don't spill over publicly very much, say, gosh, we spend
that's
all
why
our
you're
time.
That's why you're down there, PK.
Kind of, but it's annoying that people sort of say a lot off the record. And of course, that's what I'm trying to give you the flavour of, the real thinking behind things. But, you know, I'm more reluctant on, and that's a whole other column and I've written it, you know, Labor people vary on message all the time. But privately, they're like, geez, we like to step in and save, you know, the jobs of hard hats. You know, there is a sort of blue collar jobs, kind of very, very hyper masculine industrialist policy by the government and the opposition. And I rarely hear about the feminised industries at the moment. I just think that's fallen off a little. I think it's really fascinating to watch. And I think the reason it's all happened is because of the changing geopolitical environment. And what you make matters the most at the moment, because what you make and what you use is your material everyday experience and the rise of one nation. Yeah. So am I right? Is this kind of sovereignty, 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 get a new word, guys.
I think you're absolutely right. We've got, you know, sovereignty coming out of the lips of Andrew Hastie and Matt Canavan. You've got, you know, Anthony Albanese's progressive patriotism, which he's trying to, you know, weirdly shape into basically the same message. So, that's what's happening. And we're going to hear it more, PK, because, you know, One Nation's surge in the South Australian election was everything that the national polls promised it would be, which means it's trouble, not just for a weak state opposition, but for the major parties everywhere. Voters are switching to Pauline Hanson. It's happened in South Australia. The federal Farah by-election is next. One Nation surge and the Liberal collapse, like we said at the start, have landed in Canberra like a clanging bell. And what it means is, you know, where One Nation has hit Labor, and I think that's, you know, you've been talking to people about this and how they're going to respond, is in those outer suburb and regional seats. This was Peter Dutton's strategy, remember? Appealing to families in outer suburban areas. It didn't deliver for him. So I think the Albanese government probably felt more relaxed about the threat, but it's delivered now in South Australia for One Nation. Every party says after a shock result that they're listening, but listening and changing aren't the same things. And in both major parties right now, I think, you know, there'll be people drawing up action plans, testing language, looking at seat level results, trying to work out what can be done before this sets, before people have said in their mind, I'm going to vote for One Nation, even though I've always voted Labor or whatever it is. You know, is it going to be contagion?
Contagion is a great word. Okay, couple of things I want to say on this. First thing is, this is now officially the first real vote, not, hello, I'm an opinion pollster asking for your opinions, which is not a real vote, obviously, but a real vote where we can see that it's not just a fiction or a beat up or a sort of vibe, it's real. So that's the first thing. That's how it's being interpreted by the major parties as well. They say, okay, so it's broken the mold now. The fact that they outpolled the coalition is wild, right? Like it is, we cannot overestimate, like we cannot talk enough about how significant that is. So it brings me to the ramifications. Couple of ramifications that are worth mentioning. The first one being that I think this has really changed the status of One Nation when it comes to other institutions of Australia, including big business. And I'll explain. This week is Resources Minerals Week, whatever they call it. So there's like mining types everywhere in Canberra, like swarming the joint, as you know, Fran, right? Like lobbying, giving speeches, doing all the stuff that people who like to make a lot of money do. And I was told by somebody yesterday as a get around, and I was like, out around the traps and speaking to somebody who said at one of these functions, there was literally a lineup of mining executives sort of trying to suck up to Pauline Hanson. And I thought, wow, right? Because they're like, they see this and other parts of big business do and think, okay, well, we have to park where the power will be in the future. And so that's a game changer. Watch that space in terms of donations. A lot of big business donate to the major parties, even equally sometimes, to sort of tick off whoever might win so they can, you know, like have a good relationship with them. Whether they increase that and include One Nation will be key now that they have outpolled the Liberals. It's the first point. In terms of how it's being received by the coalition, well, existential crisis continues, whether to keep chasing that vote or to recalibrate. So that continues. And then for Labor, I'm going to point you to one moment this week and then throw it back to you, Fran, because I'm being a mic hog, but it's a good
hog
moment.
Hog away.
So, you know, like what did Raph and I call me? Like the chief observer. So I chiefly observed this. Mark Butler, health minister, senior left-wing figure, very good minister, really smart guy, well-received, well-rated, well-liked, South Australian. He gave his answer to a Dorothy Dixer on health, and he did this thing that I've now checked with senior Labor people. Is this like a thing now? And confirmed yes, where, you know, they do that thing in Dorothy Dixer's where they're like, they talk about the alternative policies and then they try and trash those alternative policies. And that's the coalition usually. So he did the coalition thing. And then went on to trash the One Nation policy on Medicare. I didn't see the word Medicare on their website when I went to the One Nation website. And now this is, Labor is now treating One Nation like part of the opposition, officially. They're trying to debunk their kind of cases so that they can lose some of their credentials among working class voters where they feel like they're gathering traction. And they are constructing, you know, real campaigns against One Nation. Now, some Labor people I've spoken to think, oh, we've got to be careful and not give them too much of a platform through overreacting to them. Others think we got to get ahead of this curve and not make ourselves vulnerable. I don't know, Fran, I think it's a real thing. Like, I think that the political parties, they're not stupid and they can see that One Nation is becoming a true populist force. One person said to me, populism has arrived here. And it's going to get worse before it gets better.
I guess that's right. That's what I was trying to say when I said, you know, yeah, we're listening. Well, you've got to change, and that's the change. And it's no fluke that Mark Butler, who you mentioned there, lives in South Australia. The seat he lives in is a blue-collar working-class seat, by and large, and this is where the changes are happening. So I think that says a lot, and we're going to hear a lot more of that. But I also have noted, and it was interesting, Pauline Hanson, at that Minerals Council dinner that you were talking about, where there was a conga line of mining executives trying to lobby her because, you know, let's face it, they know their message is going to land well with Pauline Hanson. And she was making a big pitch about, we need to be working with the coalition parties to get this terrible government out. We need to be changing preferences with them. Of course, we will exchange preferences with them. We need to be preferencing each other, which is not something One Nation actually has done much in the past, despite its rhetoric. So she is now talking about the coalition parties and One Nation working together, not as a formal coalition, but an informal one. And she would support a coalition government, she says, in, you know, supply and things like that, if she could get them elected to the parliament. That's a big switch. But also, we heard Matt Canavan, who's the new National Party leader, talking about urging his parties to, in the Farah by-election, preference One Nation. Now, this is the same Matt Canavan who just a couple of weeks ago criticised Pauline Hanson as not fit to lead a political party in this country. And now he is publicly saying Liberal and Nats should preference One Nation in the seat of Farah. They should be preferring each other. So that's another big switcheroo that's just happened in the wake of this result last weekend.
The switcheroo has been quite intense, right? And it's one of these things where it's like, okay, it's Genesis, you know, it's a state election, there's all these caveats, but it really marks the beginning of something. And you think about One Nation's interventions in some of our national debates at the moment. You mentioned it before, Barnaby Joyce banging on about fuel rationing, which I can see is going to happen. So he was the first one to ask questions on it, right? Like, again, I wouldn't quite say they're setting the agenda because that's massive overreach. I'm not going to claim that. But they are certainly shaping the debate more than they used to, wouldn't you say? Like, it's, I just don't see the heavy lifting going on quite as much from the opposition.
No, that's true. But they're only shaping it on those three or four issues that they have been talking about and Pauline Hanson's been talking about for decades, which is energy, you know, fossil fuels, need more fossil fuels, don't need green energy, don't need net zero, immigration, those issues. I'm waiting to see a bigger policy blueprint from One Nation. I'm wondering who's writing that now, because it won't be Pauline Hanson. I'm wondering if there is some organised effort to provide a wider policy blueprint, because until One Nation has that, they are vulnerable to attacks from the other parties about, you know, what was it Matt Canavan said? I haven't heard argue for one dam or, you know, win one dam for country Australia.
And I think yesterday we got another line showing almost the same messaging from both sides of politics, which is fascinating, which was from Tim Ayres at the press club, which was like, you know, have they, you know, organised one roundabout? You know, like, so it's this, they're the protest populist party. They don't deliver you anything.
Will that change, PK? Now they've got so much of the vote. They've got so much support from corporate Australia, so much financial support, so much political support. Will that change? And will and is somebody working on a policy blueprint as we speak?
Don't know. But what I do know is it's shaken up our political debate enormously. And I think that's, you know, pretty significant. Look, Fran, what a week. Honestly, the world feels like a bin fire at the moment, but we are here fighting the good fight, telling you what's going on. That's it for the Party Room today. We'll be back for a Question Time edition tomorrow. Keep sending your questions in. We love getting them to the Party Room at abc.net.au.
And David Spears, don't forget, we'll be back for Insiders on Background on Saturday. And we all need more background at the moment. Otherwise, we're just getting the slogans. And then you'll be back for Politics Now on Monday, PK.
Yeah, that's right. That's the sort of final sitting week before the big break and Easter, before the budget's delivered, which, of course, is going to be quite a huge event. It really will. Like, all budgets are significant, but this one is going to be a doozy. So I think all of those weeks we'll be talking about what the frame will be going into that. Follow Politics Now on ABC Listen. You will never miss an episode as a consequence of that decision. Share it with your friends. See you, Fran.
See you, PK.